subject matter in the preceding podcast is entirely alleged and not admissible in a court of law. A recklessly minimal effort has been taken to change the names and details of any guilty parties. And just in case you rat bastards get any ideas, the hosts of this podcast are notorious and well-documented liars with no legally admissible credibility. This is Mama C, and you're listening to Notes from the Pen podcast. Welcome to prison, bitch.
Greetings from the prison industrial complex. You're listening to the Notes from the Pen podcast. I am your loopy, exhausted, sleep-deprived host and tour guide to the carceral system. Today with me, I have an awake bearded man at the ironing board studios, JD. What's up, bud?
It is snowing, and as soon as we're done, I think I'm going to go snowboarding.
Yeah, me too. I was thinking thinking about doing that.
Yeah, right.
We hung up.
Yep, exactly.
I'm thinking about diving head first off my top bunk and hoping I get knocked unconscious so I can actually get a little sleep.
I just thought we would talk about your prison snowboard and how many layers of cardboard it took to make.
It took a lot of cardboard and paint. But no, there is no prison snowboard. There are skis at Kinross that you can have. Yeah, you can get skis.
Dude, that's awesome.
But there's no hills you can go down.
Just cross-country skis. That's fun. I used to do that shit when I was a kid. That's fun. That's good cardio.
They used to pile up all this snow around the baseball diamond and create these little mini mountain ranges. And by mini, I mean like 10, 15 feet high. But it'd be in like a circle. And I wrote a piece on the website called, I think it's Moments in Breathing Freedom, I think it might be called.
Okay.
And it's about like getting lost out there and finding just the right angle where I couldn't see any razor wire, and I could pretend that it was the ice skating rink and all this stuff. I think that's what it's called, Moments in Breathing Freedom.
So let's.
And, it's all right.
So
it's pretty good.
So prison snowball fights, acceptable or no?
Say that again? Oh, prison snowball fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happens. Not full on, like planned ones, but people will definitely blast each other with snowballs.
I would think that would be a time where like your inner child comes out. You know what I mean? And like everybody kind of forgets like where we're at for just a second. I mean, obviously you can't forget 100%, but.
Well, let me just tell you this.
Yeah.
No one in here has lost their inner child or even grown out of it. So it's, it's not even, I don't care how old you are. Those are always going to be funny.
That was just a callback to Mama C's latest fact. That was really hilarious.
I don't even remember what it was. I remember
people that get pleasure.
Someone who gets pleasure. Yeah.
I don't remember the scientifical term. Scientifical?
Scientific? Wow.
Okay.
This is fitting of the morning I'm having. My belt just broke. My leather belt snapped off. Let me go ahead and put it in my pocket. Okay, so let's get into it.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what's happening. I'm so loopy right now that I was like, maybe you would my initial thing was like, I don't think I can do an episode. I'm so loopy that it might be good. It might be weird and I can let you run it or whatever. So this episode, you know, I like to stagger the themes or the general like tone of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one was Chicken Fight, which is about the day-to-day gonzo journalism of my life in prison. The QBs, the bunkies, the chaos of the unit and all that stuff. And there's been so much happening that there's been a lot of those episodes.
Right.
So this one, I wanted to do something different, either the AI one or maybe we talk about Pen America and how the edits are coming and all that stuff. But here's the thing. This place will not let me because every damn day, multiple times a day, there are the most disturbing, occasionally comical, insane, ridiculous episodes and happenstance and occurrences that if you saw one of these, they'd be the craziest thing you'd seen.
Sure.
And maybe your whole life.
But see, this is you flexing your good reporter gene. Like, you are giving us what's happening. You know, we want the heavy stuff. We want to talk about, like, serious topics, but it's just impossible in that place.
Well, a lot of the, I've always been like this, and I assume that a lot of our listeners are the same, especially the ones that came over from Stanhope, that we find humor in inappropriate or tragic, kind of surprising areas, you know, non-typical areas. Right. So the humor in sadness and tragedy and trauma for us is a little different than maybe some people. So it always ends up being a fine line. There's a funny retelling of the shit that happens for multiple reasons. One of the reasons that it comes out the way is that's my personality. That's the shit I've been. It's just the way I operate, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, but also, part and parcel of that is humor is the easiest way to transmute trauma, right? Mm-hmm. It's the easiest way to transmute that energy into something non-destructive, mm-hmm. right? So when people say, that's inappropriate, you shouldn't joke about that.
It's usually
people who haven't been right. It's usually people who haven't been through a ton of trauma. You know what I mean? Or if they have, they've been through trauma. They're living in it. Mm-hmm. They're wallowing in it, and it's beating their ass. So
that to me is too.
So
tiring.
Yeah. So I try.
If I had to succumb to every emotion based on things that happen in front of me, I would be just a mess like that. That's to me, that's more work. That's more taxing on you emotionally and spiritually, I think. If, you know, something tragic happens to you and you just, like you said, you wallow in it. God, just laugh, man. Just, it's okay. It's okay to laugh. You know what I mean?
It's in order.
It's necessary.
It's called for. It's completely called for. Now it's harder for some people.
Yeah.
But
I feel like it's a way to jar yourself. Like it's a jarring thing. You know, if you're in the middle of, I don't want to say like a funeral or something, and you laugh, that's a way for you to short circuit the way your brain was working, right? It's a way to short circuit that thought process and bring you back into reality. In my opinion, you're like your reality.
Or it's a way to take control, too, of a situation that's otherwise out of your control,
right?
So, like, especially in here, it's like I have no autonomy, really, right? Mm-hmm. Or almost no autonomy. The one thing is it's certainly not physical. It's not diet. It's not sleeping hours. It's not all these other things that most people consider autonomy, freedom. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I'm always going to be able to control and have freedom over, and this is the number one lesson prison's taught me, is that I can always control how I perceive things and how I experience things, right? How I designate an experience, how I define that experience, and what I do with that experience, you know? It's not easy, but that's...
Do you think that's common, or do you think that's rare, being able to control your perception?
You mean... Like, I think it's rare. Okay. I think everyone has the ability to do it. Mm-hmm. Excluding like severe brain trauma or something. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a learned trait, right? I think people can do it in small little spurts, but I think it's like anything. It's a skill that you develop, and you know, in a place like this, you get a lot more practice with the heavier exercise equipment, if you will, when it comes to that kind of workout.
So does that kind of leads me to a real quick question. I'm not trying to lead you away from what you want to talk about, but do you think most people are doing their bit? They're just doing the bit. They're not looking at it from any other perspective whatsoever. It's just, I'm here. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing because that's what they told me to do. And they're not looking at it from another perspective.
I think most people end up in prison, the types of people who end up in prison, not all, but a majority of the type of the people who end up in prison already have a stunted...
Like view of their reality?
Control of exercising control of their situation, the circumstance, and the way they approach and deal with it. They're led around by their id emotionally.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then... their superficial ego, right? In the sense that's like, everything's very vague and crude when it comes. There's very little depth in here with most people. And that's not a judgment of mine saying like you should be better, but it's just an observation. There's very little depth. The smallest insight to someone in here seems so profound to it. You know what I mean? Like shit that seems like common sense about controlling your perspective and how struggles can be used as like jet fuel to propel you forward and stuff like that. It's just like people like they've been down 10 years, never thought of it. And they're like, damn, that's... I had someone tell me he's missing his top four front teeth. Mm-hmm. And I don't even remember the conversation I was having. He's an older, not old, he's probably like 40-something. Ouch. And he goes, hey, man, he's talking with his tongue like this because he's missing his teeth.
Yes.
He said, hey, man, I heard that shit you were saying the other day, and that shit was deep, man. And I was like, okay. You're spitting on me, sir. Sir.
Sir.
Sir. Social distance. No, but I vaguely remember what I was talking about, but it wasn't anything like especially profound or anything.
Right.
Some people are defined by their tragedy and trauma, and some people are motivated by it. It's up to you. A piece that I wrote very early on, which means it's terribly written, I'm sure. There's a piece called I think it's just called Free Will versus Determinism.
Okay.
And I'm making like a philosophical argument that materialists might be right, and maybe we don't have as much free will as we think, but I think ultimately, no matter what, we do have the free will to control kind of the way we perceive things and what we do with, you know, with the way we perceive the circumstances we find ourselves in. So that being said, it kind of leads into where I wanted to go. So we left off with the chicken fight, a chaotic, yes, absurd, ridiculous story that kind of puts a little magnifying glass on the current tape chaos that's going on in here. So I wanted to do something different.
Okay.
But even just after we finished that episode, one of the main characters, Grandpa Face, locked up.
Dumbass.
Grandpa Face locked up. Told on people, apparently, because right after he did it, he get now.
Wait, what? Funky. So he dropped a dime on somebody? Just
yeah. Random? Well, you kind of have to when they're locking up. You know what I mean? I mean, you can just say like, I'm in fear for my safety and all that stuff. But if you really, because it's annoying and a pain in the ass to them too. They gotta pack you up and all that shit. So, he because they went and shook some people down and stuff like that. And his poor Bonky just keeps getting shithead. Bonkies that end up running up debt.
Wait, who's his Bonky?
And they blame it.
Is it
Hod?
Okay, Hod. Yeah, okay.
And they end up blaming him, and he doesn't do shit. He minds his own business. He's a nice guy. He's reasonable.
Right.
Now, sometimes Grandpa Face like is begging to be slapped, and he's like got get. So now there's a lot to cover here.
Okay.
So
I'll show.
I can't. It's like no. I'm not even saying that. I'm saying I can't really go into too much depth with it because this is how much nonsense is just going and go. So Grandpa Face locks up.
Yep.
All right. It's really he owed money and shit, but also he got caught like using his Bunky's tablet charger.
What?
Basically as a lighter. And like he watched him, he looked down and watched him and watched him do it. Right? Watched him do it and then said, hey man, and he goes, No, I wasn't. I it fell down here and I was about to hand it back up to you. And he's like, I just watched you fucking do it. Now, if you use that for what he's using it for, you burn it out. You'll melt the plastic on the inside of it and all these other things. So that little tension kind of gave him the extra little motivation to get the fuck on. So he locks up. And they move him. They train it up and move him on the other side. But because it looks like he told on people, we thought maybe he was like completely gone. Anyway, later that night, the angry professor is trounced. I mean, he is just, he's just blowed, like demolished, blowed, like so fucked up, right?
Okay.
And I think they're a new brand of
Amen
or something, right? So remember I said everyone's an immature child in here?
Yes.
So I'm like putting him down, like he basically someone carries him down the hall and drops
Are
him off
you
there.
Kidding
now
I
go this shit again. I guide him onto the chair, sit down, and when you're like trying to make them sit down, their bodily control is kind of stiff. So it's hard for them to move. They have to move real slow and shit, right? And when you're helping them, they just look at you with this, "Who are you?" Like, where am I? What am I?
Dude.
And it's just annoying. You just like, oh, sit him. So I sit him down.
You're a saint.
And while I'm doing it, our foreign friend,
yes,
Ruski,
yeah,
has a pin, and he pretends to, like, slash his neck with it. You know, like, he goes,
Okay.
Right? While I'm trying to, like, I go, hey, I mean, knock it off, come on. And he's like, ah, like everyone's laughing with this happening. So then he goes and pokes him in the stomach with it.
Okay.
Now, I don't really see that. I kind of see that what's going on. I'm just trying to sit him down. With this, he bursts to life.
What?
And he grabs a chair, and he goes, ah! Yelling at the top of his lungs, you stabbed me, motherfucker!
What?
Now, he's got a chair, a plastic chair, like a lion tamer in the old circus.
Yeah, right.
And he's knocking into shit, and there's, like, cups of water on the table, and a spent people are trying to move it. I'm trying to calm him down. He's loud and he's mobile, which is rare. This is like a different
version
or whatever.
Yeah, right.
But he gets to running outside, and now the whole unit's aware. They're all watching. He's running up and down, saying, "No, you're fucking going back. You tried to kill me, you motherfucker! God, how could you do?" And it's just going and going, and,
okay,
and Ruski's going. He gets scared because he doesn't.
Oh.
He's a dumbass. He instigates these fucking things. What do you think's going to happen? But then he's like, all right, shh, come on, who's going to eat? Come on.
I didn't mean to. It's a Bic.
Quiet. I was just playing. That's what he's saying. I was just playing.
Yeah.
And he can't get it through his mind. He thinks like he's faking, which he seemed kind of extreme, but he's also out of his fucking head. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So this goes on for a while. He ends up coming down like an hour later, and then later in the
An hour? Like, that's an eternity. Holy shit.
Well, we calm him down. It takes like 10 minutes to like get him to stop yelling and running up,
right,
and down the thing, right? But he's stewing about the situation, and he starts.
Why? It's...
The angry professor is so.
Oh God.
He's so. I don't. I think I described him as like he's like an intellectual and verbal Joe Pesci from Casino.
Right.
Instead of physical.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's like, no. Why would you do that? You motherfucker. You think that? And just pokes and
great reference
people.
To the pen too, by the way.
And at some point in the middle of the night, I'm trying to talk to him about it, right? Because I was having him help me type up my He helped me type up the copy of the clinic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had to step in, squash a beef, because which I then almost took on, you know.
Right.
And said,
yeah.
Not while he's got a deal. And so I was going to order a secure pack. I actually sent, like, the list and everything, and I was going to give him his, like, for typing, his typing payment out of that.
Okay.
But I was going to get the rest of it, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And he's getting rowdy and jumping around, and immediately I'm like, motherfucker, I got to go hit Mama C up and say, do not order that in this dummy's name. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Because he goes to the hole, and that whole thing's lost. So now he's kind of trying to hash this out. So he sits down next to me, and I go, listen, I'm just going to order in my name, and then I'm going to give you what I owe you for helping me type it.
Okay.
And while we're talking, he's like, he sees himself as a victim, and he's painting himself as a victim.
Okay.
Now, were certain things done wrong? Yeah, for sure. Were two people involved? Yeah. But I'm very pragmatic in here. It's a waste of energy to point fingers and try to find out who's to blame,
mm-hmm,
really,
mm-hmm,
unless you have no blame at all. So I'm telling him, you have to look at your own. So you think it's okay for him to play like he's stabbing me when I'm out, or poking me when I'm crazy and out of my mind? I said, no, I don't think that's okay. But I'm saying you created the situation by getting super explode where you don't know what reality is. And then you get upset and irate and all in a tizzy,
mm-hmm,
when emotionally stunted people with lack of self-control or impulse control, when you poke and prod them, and then, you know, or they act out as like kids and whatever. So I'm trying to explain to him.
Jesus.
Because he doesn't think what happened. He thinks it's different. He's like, I came down here, and then I put some up here. And I said, that's not what happened, bro. You got carried the fuck down here.
Mm-hmm.
And now we got another doobie. I'm not going to say his name, but I have before on here.
Okay.
Who has also helped him up there before. And he gets so mad because he's hearing this shit. And he goes, you motherfucker, get the fuck out of here. Lock me, bitch. You got to go. Get out of here. And he's like, I'm not going anywhere. because I don't do it. And then he may or may not get thumped on a little bit. Bing, 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 bing. Doesn't even get up from the chair, though. Just thumped on, side of his head, starts bleeding. But this is just what he wanted. And this is, and so then now I spend like an hour talking to him about this. I'm like, see, you're doing it right now. You're still poking and prodding people. And he's like, I never disrespected anyone in here. And I have to explain to him, listen, bud, I've had to wake up from sleeping in the middle of the night, put you up on your bunk. Mm-hmm. And then because you don't shower like you should, I have to go bird bath because I smell like B.O. And funk. And I said, you never once said thank you or apologized for that. So don't say no one. I said, everyone's been in here looking out for you. And not only are you thankless mm-hmm. about it, you're like sniping and biting and shit, right? So after
this is worse than taking care of drunk people. Like worse.
Oh, so much worse.
Way worse. Like we have nothing to complain about.
So listen, so after that thumping, you know, he's like wiping red liquid off the side of his head.
Sure.
And he's going, I've never locked up in my pit, but now I got to lock up because I can't stay here. And I'm like,
what?
I end up dead in the whole thing. I make this other person give me his word that at first I asked him, I'm like, so can he stay? And he's like, yeah, just don't talk to me, whatever. Give him his word. He's not going to do anything to you. You mind your business. He's going to mind his. You don't have to lock up. Now, I'm not going to beg you like he wants me to.
Well, yeah.
You don't have to lock up. And
so wait a minute. Is the trade-off you don't want to risk what? If he locks up, then you run the risk of getting a worse like QB.
Not just that. That's one thing. But you got to remember, this is the same day Grandpa case, just hours earlier.
Right.
Locked up. And they've already said to our like, you guys keep running people out of here, and we're like, well, stop putting crackheads in. You know what I mean? And so, do you know the type of heat it's going to bring on if two people lock up within a couple hours?
Oh, they're tossing all your shit.
Right. So there's that aspect. There's the other aspect of, I don't want anyone to get in trouble. I don't want the guy who helped on him to get in trouble. I don't want him to, he's got his parole, angry professor. And mm-hmm. I don't want him to have to stay here another 12 months, but you know, he's doing everything he can to get his parole.
Right. Taken. Yeah.
So that was like, I had multiple factors. So I end up taking a long time, but he ends up staying up all night and I have to tell him, hey, but I'm going to sleep. I need you to push that chair away from my bunk. And he says he's going to quit and blah, blah. So that's that thing, right?
Okay.
That happened right after we recorded the chicken fight episode.
I'm exhausted.
The day after, mm-hmm. a guy jumps up at 11 at night when everything's quiet and people are sleeping, screaming, falling down in the hall. Big, probably like 220-pound.
What?
Light-skinned dude.
Mm-hmm.
Having fun. He puts his shower shoes, which are basically flip-flops, yep. on his hand.
Uh-oh.
And said, I'll fight anyone. I'll fight. But he's holding them like how you would hold mitts for
taking a pan out of the oven.
No, mitts like someone's you're training a boxer.
Oh, okay, mitts, yeah.
Like,
yep.
like pads, like you're holding
Inverted.
Pads.
Yep.
Yeah, so I jolt up out of bed because this is prison and I don't know what's going on. Now everyone's awake, everyone's watching, you can hear everything. I go back to sleep once I realize everything's straight, and I put like a chair in front of my bunk so I would hear it if someone ran in there, because these people are losing their minds.
Jesus.
I don't stay up for the whole thing, but I hear the stories the next morning, and that he sat by the CO, and then he ran up to the front, to the control center.
Right.
Came back that night and asked someone, hey, can I get some more of that?
Oh, my God.
They don't remember it.
Oh, my God.
They don't remember that. Okay, so that's the next day after a chicken fight. Now, the next day, after that, actually, it's a couple days, like 2-3 days after that,
because mm-hmm.
This was yesterday. I'm walking, I get off the phone, I'm waiting to make another call, I'm spinning laps,
okay.
and I see the bipolar bear regular stumble out of the unit, face red. He's being lazily accosted by a 6'4" gentleman.
What?
Who's like 250 pounds, probably 40 pounds, with vomit all over his face and beard. No shirt on. And he backs him up and he's pressing their emergency thing. And then I watch every CO in the yard one by one run over with their tail. You know what I mean?
No.
And he's going, you shut the fuck up, you shut the fuck. And he, when he sees like this, after there are two, they're kind of got him circled, another one starts coming. He motions to grab a gun that he doesn't have out of his waist.
Okay.
Pulls it up, points it at, even though there's nothing there, points it like he's going to, like if he had one, he would have fired.
Right.
And he realizes, oh, I don't have a
Yeah, this
gun.
Is my finger gun. I forgot the, yeah.
Right. And they end up surrounding him, popping him with the taser, and cuffing him and taking him up. No sooner than he's in the control center, they all disperse again to run out back. There's a Choma there getting jumped, right? So I know they're closing yard.
Yep.
So I'm spinning. I hear the sergeant come out, close yard. So I go in there. So these are the things that are happening that I don't want to do an episode about, but it's so...
That is madness.
Right. So I go back after this, and I'm sitting in there. We don't have phone access.
Right.
We don't have fresh air. We can't work out. We don't have... So we're just all stuck in there, right, for who knows how long. They're like, we're going to start tearing this bitch up because we don't know what you guys are doing in here. So now it's going to get hot in there. And
yep.
A bunch of one-on-one intention to people like me who aren't on anything. I'm just trying to write, you know.
Right.
And so during this time, Justin comes up to me and says, hey, listen, I know you're close to Ron, who's a friend of Nick, and we go way back to Kinross and stuff.
Okay.
And he says, but I just saw him in the lobby sobbing.
What?
So you might want to go talk to him.
Okay.
So I go out there and try to find him, but he's on the phone. You know, he's like, you could tell he was crying. And then I catch him a little bit later, and he's going outside and say, listen, man, are you all right? What happened? He says, my favorite cousin died.
Oh,
and he said, the worst thing that ever happened to him, he's been in here for like 32 years, Ron.
What?
And he says, the worst thing that ever happened in here is when his mother died. And that also happened in Nick. So I say, I can tell he wants to like go spin. So he's they had opened up the small patios bars later, and he's going outside. Or maybe he's going to call out. So I don't think he ever saw him. And
okay.
I can tell he kind of is trying to move. So I go, listen, just know I'm here.
Yep.
Let me know if you need anything. I got you. If you ever want to talk, whatever, until you leave. What do you say in a situation like this, you know, when someone passes in here? That doesn't sound stupid. You know what I mean?
Maybe you don't have to really say anything. You know, I might sound silly, but you just have to listen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I end up thinking about him in the chow hall. So and then I looked up, and he's sitting in the corner, and there's one little thing open there, so I sit down with him.
Yep.
And there's two other people there, too. It's four people.
Okay.
At the table. And so we just act normal. You know, maybe you don't know how people want to deal with this. Some people don't want to get emotional, especially in front of other people, especially in front of people they don't know in a chow hall. And so I kind of just talk normal to them. We just like, hey, you going to give me that cookie? You know, back and forth. Hey, you got a bag? I'm going to try to put this pizza in here. Da, da, da.
Right.
And then one of the other guys gets up and leaves. And I'm sitting next, like, corner to corner. Like, he's not across from me. You know what I mean? So he's to my left.
Okay.
And so I lean over and I say, listen, man, there's nothing really to say when this type of shit happens. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I said, but I want you to know that whatever you want to do, if you want to talk, if you want a distraction, whatever it is, I got you and I'm here. You know what I'm saying? He says, I know. I appreciate you. And then we kind of go back to talking normal. And then when we get up to walk out, we walk real slow, and on the walk back, we kind of talk.
Okay.
And he tells me about, I knew his mom passed while he was in here, and I knew Nick's mom passed while. And God forbid. You know what I mean? Ugh. God forbid. There, but for the grace of God, go I. And so, Mama C, you take care of yourself.
That's right.
So I walk it back. You know, I'm just kind of talking to him and say, like, I can't imagine. The talk about a lack of autonomy. You can't go to anyone's funeral. You know, you can't go put your person in the ground or hold their hand or be with them when they're passing. I said, you know what? I told him the story about JC. For those of you that don't know, he was, he kind of latched on to me at Parnell.
Yep.
He had and still has a lack of self-identity. He doesn't really know who he is, and he's just waiting for someone to tell him, right? So it's easy for him to be manipulated by bad people
yep.
or kind of like fostered by good decent people. Human beings. Mm-hmm. Right. So I leave my books to them when I get wrote out at Parnell because I had a bunch of overflow from COVID and I knew they wouldn't let me bring it. So I leave, and 2 weeks later I'm sitting in the K-unit and I see him show up. And he's like, God damn, I got those fucking all 80 books here and I had to bring them, blah, blah, blah. So he starts spiraling here. And I have to, like, distance from him. Mm-hmm. And I found some other stuff out about him since, but he told on someone, on actually one of my QBs now, which is so crazy how small the world is.
Wow.
And he also kind of broke a cardinal rule. Like, he kind of J-paid you and tried to get some money from you.
Mm-hmm.
And I view you as family. Mm-hmm. And if I feel close enough or trust you enough to connect my family with you, and he knows this. You didn't really understand this, but in prison, this is a big thing.
Right.
You, yep. It's like trying. It's like hitting on your girlfriend, or like taking your little sister out. Someone that you feel protective over. You know,
sure.
they're trying to like use them for their own benefit without checking or
right.
You know what I mean?
That was very interesting to me because I just again I just assume I'm just helping somebody because that's what it. It's not like I'm talking to him, you know, it's literally right. Just a J-pay. So there's no emotion behind it. To me, I was just like, oh, dude needs help. Not a problem.
Right. But it's different in here. So sure. I'm responsible for you. Right. Mm-hmm. So if this guy does anything to you, I'm responsible for it. If mm-hmm. if he lies to you or he manipulates you, if he does any of this bullshit, I'm responsible for you. You're my family.
Mm-hmm.
You're my, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So that's an affront to me. Even worse an affront to me because it's someone I've always gotten more upset about my mama C and my sister and my friends, ladies where I would tell you that,
yep.
than I do about myself, and I feel protective. And so that was the thing. But after that happened, I see on the news that there's this triple murder suicide up here. And they start saying the names, and I recognize the name Dayton. Mm-hmm. And that was JC's son. And I used to tell him, like, hey, he said, I don't get to talk to him anymore. And I was going through something similar with Cassius. I said, listen, this is what I do, though. Can you let me read this poem he wrote? I said, I keep a journal that I write to him all the time, so that way I send it out. And if he ever does get a hold of it or mm-hmm. want to read it, it's there. So he knows what you were. He doesn't end up doing it. So I had, what I'm saying is there was history. I understood. Sure. I knew who the kid was. And what had happened was the guy that his baby mom had married came in and shot her mom and killed the kid and then killed himself.
Yep.
And in that moment, I saw him, I ran into him and he said, he was crying. He started crying when he seen me. And then he said, I'm so sorry. I did, you know, what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm not worried about that right now. There's other stuff.
Pales
how you
comparison.
Doing?
Right.
You're right. Is there, how are you doing? I'm so sorry. I, if there's anything I can do, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you want to talk, but he was on the other side. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I tell Ron this story just to give him a little perspective, you know, about like
yep.
how things could get worse and how this is terrible. And I just, it's the story to like, to kind of say, you're not the only one suffering in here. And not in a way to say like toughen up, but to say you're not alone. And if we don't if we can't lean on each other, then who the fuck can we lean on? And I realized in my frustration of having to do out of necessity, mm-hmm. this sequel to Chicken Fight and the zombie epidemic, I realized as I'm like kind of thinking about the storyline of everything that happened, and I also realized it when I was talking to Ron, that in a place this dark, this traumatic, this light, this inhumane, soulless place, it's hard to come across the spark of humanity. You know what I mean? Everyone's so guarded and when you find that spark of humanity with someone you can trust and someone you have love for, and not obviously in a non-immature way, that you just got genuine humanly love for, brotherly love for. When you find someone like that, it's important to, you know what I mean, to stoke that ember
sure.
of humanity
sure.
because this place doesn't do that. This place dims those things.
Yeah.
So it made me realize that if in this place, in this circumstance, in this scenario, situation, all that other stuff, if we can find humanity in here and blow on it and stoke it to where it can warm someone up, and you can create a light and start a fire and pass it around. And if you can find that in here, and I had a moment of it with Ron, and I've had moments with, he's not the only one,
right?
But it really reminded me of how indomitable the human spirit can be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No matter what circumstances you're in, if you choose to, you know, stoke someone else's little ember of humanity and bond and connection and relation and understanding and empathy and all these other things, and it dawned on me, man, it's so important to invest so much time in that. We're like in that, Castaway, when Tom Hanks finally gets the first ember going.
Yeah,
it takes him forever. And once he has it, he just cradles it, and he's so excited, and he blows, mm-hmm. and everything starts from there.
Right.
And it just made me realize, and I know maybe it sounds a little cheesy, but this is real life, made me realize that if I can find it in here, over death of someone I love.
Yep.
And you have a moment to indulge in humanity and to remember that we're people and we're all going through shit, then that means it survives anywhere.
Absolutely.
That means it ever fully goes out.
Nope.
Unless you let it go out or you refuse to soak it or you step on, you know what I mean?
Man.
What a beautiful
what a couple of days. I mean, you went from just absolute madness to finding something beautiful. That's just amazing to me that because I, as you're talking, I'm thinking about just what we've talked about in the last 40 minutes and where it's gone, like the story arc. it's interesting how it shifted from where we began, from just being completely both probably too loopy from lack of sleep and what have you, to finding this beautiful moment.
Yeah, I thought the same thing when I kind of stumbled upon, you know, that perspective on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like always, you know, ever since that night in November when everything happened and just destroyed, you all know.
Yep.
When everything happened, I never thought I'd be able to make up for what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's a worthy endeavor to try to get back to the black. You know what I mean? To just get back, to try to get as much, to get as much value, to find as much value
mm-hmm.
and positive and benefit and meaning and understanding and a million other things from that. I owe that mm-hmm. to everyone that I hurt and Monica, most of all.
You're doing it now, like the way you're taking care of people, the way you're handling it, I think is in some small way a way of like you said, getting back to the black in that regard.
For sure it is. But this is where I realize you get the most investment back. If I can successfully, because it cost me a lot to come to some of these realizations, to learn these lessons. If I can somehow be the conduit for people mm-hmm. out there to learn these same lessons and gain the same appreciations without paying the cost I had to pay, then that goes so much farther.
Oh, man.
And that's what a lot of my writing's about. That's definitely what this show is about, amongst other things. And so I just, yeah. So do me a favor,
mm-hmm.
all you amazing couples out there. Just take what I'm saying and
we'll keep
and
looking,
try to
look for those little embers and let's and
look
let's,
for those little embers.
Let's stoke them.
Turn them to fire.
Yep.
You know?
That's and, right.
Yeah.
Thanks,
and,
bud.
We appreciate you.
No, thank
you. Yeah, thank you, and thank all of you out there, too, because I'll never stop saying it, and it sounds, it's the thing you're supposed to say in my situation, but that also happens to be true, and I'm incapable of saying bullshit, you know, like faking. So I really, in my weakest moments, that, like, I'll get a letter from Ashley Bell, mm-hmm. or a JPay message from someone in another country that I've never even met before,
yeah.
that says, hey, man, I've been listening for a couple of years, and I don't really reach out, and I didn't want to or didn't plan to, but I said, you know what, I just wanted to say that, like, when you talk about mental health or whatever it is,
yeah.
I really appreciate that, and it did something for me, and I feel you, and I've been there, and it hits me in the chest.
Yeah.
And it makes me realize, again, I would have never known about that person.
Yeah. Hey, and that's how you and I met.
Yeah, that's exactly how. Look at us.
Look at us. Look at us, too.
Look at us now. Two loopy fucks early in the morning. Now, listen, go snowboarding. I'm going to go wax mine up. I love you, too. On behalf of myself, all you little pebbles and embers out there,
yep.
Mama, see, everyone you love and everyone we love,
mm-hmm.
we are gone.
We go.
Hi, everybody. Mama C here. For the complete library, full episodes, and bonus content, and mainly to support this cause, visit Notes from the Pen on Patreon. To learn more about Bobby and prison reform, visit our website, notesfromthepen.com. And follow us on Twitter to stay current. This has been another Notes from the Pen production.